I call this meeting of the Committee on Energy and Finance Policy to order. We do not have quorum yet, so we are just waiting on members. They are scattered about the Capitol. All in favor? No, just teasing. So we do not have any amendments that we will approve. We'll wait till we have quorum on that. We do have Representative Scott. You have House File 1040. If you want to come before the committee, introduce yourself, and we can, I don't know if we, can we officially move the bill at this point, or do we, we have 10. Okay, I guess we do have quorum. All right, we do call this, we have quorum. Our first item of business is approval of the minutes. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for the meeting of February 25th, 2025? Representative Murphy, would you like to, have you reviewed the minutes? Would you like to move the minutes?
And
All right. Representative Murphy approves the minutes from February 25th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And the minutes from February 25th are approved. Representative Scott, to your bill, I move. Representative Scott moves that House File 1040 be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Representative Scott, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I first introduced this bill, believe it or not, in 2014, 11 years ago, because I saw that our state and, in fact, the entire country was moving toward green energy infrastructure. And my concern was that when these the infrastructure reached its useful life, that it wasn't just dumped in a landfill somewhere. And a few years after 2014, I indeed had what became affectionately known as Peg's Pit in my community, and it was a waste pit that had to be cleaned up, and it cost the taxpayers over $20 million for that to happen. And I didn't want that happening in other people's communities. And, you know, I was further inspired. I'm from Iowa originally, so when I go down to see friends and family, I go down Interstate 35. And on the east side of Interstate 35, somewhere after Clear Lake, there's a big old pile of wind blades. And it's been there for a long, long time. And I read an article recently that there's a lawsuit now. The state of Iowa is suing to have those wind blades removed, and it's been quite an ordeal. So I just don't want that happening in our state. So I worked with staff at the time to get a bill patterned after the e-waste and then the paint stewardship programs. And the biggest change of this bill this year is the language at the end of the bill on 9.28 to 10.2 that places a moratorium on disposing of wind and solar infrastructure into landfills or mixed municipal solid waste. In 2023, the legislature enacted a law regarding a study and a report on end-of-life management for solar voltaic modules and installation components. And I don't know if your committee's seen that report yet. It's quite lengthy. I printed it off at home before I realized how many pages it was. But the legislature did commission a study to be done in 2023 on the disposal, recycling, and end of life of solar. So it didn't address the wind pieces, but the recommendations out of that report are that disposal on ban for all solar installations, and then a statewide recycling requirement for all solar installations, lowering decommissioning requirements, and creation of a central management organization for those smaller solar installations. The report goes on to say, failure to act now would risk leaving Minnesota in an unmanageable solar waste problem by mid-century, along with missed economic and environmental opportunities. Obviously, this bill includes, as I said, wind and solar components. And when I offered this bill as an amendment on the floor in 2023, I did ask Representative Long, Majority Leader then Long at the time, what is happening to our the wind blades, you know? And he said, well, they're being put on a train and sent out to Wyoming. Where basically, I don't know if that's for recycling, he didn't say, or if it's just they had the ability to take them there. And I wanted to walk through the bill just a little bit for members.
Representative Scott, do you have an oral amendment that you have?
Yes. Your staff did say that there's a technical amendment that we need to adopt.
Yep.
My apologies, Mr. Chair.
Oh, sir, I think, is the oral amendment on line 4.5 to change the subdivision 5 to subdivision 4. Representative Akam, I believe that's just a technical amendment, not trying to pull anything over anybody's eyes. So I move that the...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but I believe on 5.31, that needs to be changed there as well. I don't know if Mr. Eliff could clarify, but I believe that needs to be changed from 5 to 4 there as well.
Mr. Eliff?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Would you like to make the oral...
I'll move the oral amendment.
Your bill, so.
Yep.
Thank you, Representative Scott. All right, I move that the oral amendment as stated and the adjustments be made for technical changes from 4.5 change subdivision 5 to subdivision 4. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right, amendment approved. All right. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Back in the saddle. Yeah, Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair, I think you needed to also do the oral amendment on 531.
Yes, we'll do that. Thank you. And I also would like to make an oral amendment on line 5.31, subdivision 5, and move and change subdivision 5 to subdivision 6. Is that correct?
Four.
Subdivision 4. Thank you. It's a great day. All right. All in favor of that oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Oral amendment approved. All right. Representative Scott, I think the bill is correct and ready to go.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So the second section of the bill sets up a plan for product stewardship. And again, it's patterned after the paint stewardship program. And there are a series of definitions there. On page 3, at 3.6 and following, that's the assessment to add to the purchase price of a wind or solar to cover the cost of end-of-life disposal or sending it to be recycled. In the requirement, there's a requirement to submit a plan on the bottom of page 3. That plan would be sent to the MPCA for approval. And then there, throughout this plan, it gives some dates. If you apply for the plan, the MPCA has, I believe, it's 90 days to approve it. Then you have 60 days. In order to correct the plan to bring it up to whatever the standards are that the MPCA is wishing. On 6.7, subdivision 7, it just says that the MPCA will put the plan up on their website. And 6.10 is the requirement for sale. And it says beginning 90 days after the commissioner approves the stewardship plan under subdivision 6, then the wholesaler, the retailer, would need to set in motion that assessment. It goes on through subdivision 11. That's the recycler's responsibilities. It's required a license and so forth. The retailer responsibilities are outlined in 7.21. And there is a report that's required. If you go to 8.5, subdivision 13, it talks about a report that needs to be submitted. And 8.18, so this bill would eventually have to come to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee because there are data classifications. It protects anything that is a, a protected, why can't I think of the name? maybe it's on the front page here. It's trade secrets.
Yes.
That's the word I'm looking for. It would protect trade secrets and that sort of thing. And it outlines in 8.27 what the local responsibilities are, if there's a local landfill, that sort of thing. It goes into the administrative fee. And then at the very end of the bill is the wind and solar infrastructure disposal prohibitions that I spoke of. So that's really the bill. Again, it's a work in progress. I want to make this right for the state of Minnesota. And I just want to make sure that this stuff isn't just creating pegs pits all over the state. And that, I'm hearing anecdotally stories of someone approaching a farmer and saying, hey, I'm going to give you $20,000 if I can bury this wind blade in your field. And I mean, 20, you know, that's probably pretty hard to resist. But we don't want that kind of thing happening. We want to have this under lock and key. We want to have this, we want to have a stewardship program so that that isn't happening. So I'm happy to take questions, and I may defer to House research if need be.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Are there any initial questions for Representative Scott? Otherwise, we can get right to testifiers. Members, no? Okay. We have, I forgot my glasses today. That's why I am struggling here. But Kurt Kadelka from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, if you'd like to come before us. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know where they were. All I do is need longer arms. That actually is not bad. There we go. Okay. All right. Mr. Kadelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kurt Kadelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And first off, I want to thank the author for the continuing work on making sure that we move solar and wind to better uses at the end of life, including reuse and recycling. So appreciate the continuing work on this. The MPCA overall supports product stewardship in a number of different areas for materials. We have proposed, for instance, a solar panel product stewardship bill in the past. However, it wasn't able to get wide stakeholder agreement. That's why the legislature put together the report. And we have just finished the report just 2 days ago, so great timing for this meeting. And we do support the recommendations in the report. It does take a different tact, but it gets to the same goals, which is the need to recycle and reuse solar panels and not have them disposed in landfills. And it's because of those, reaching those same goals, we do support moving forward with those recommendations because it has a broader-based stakeholder agreement, and that would allow for a more easily-to-implement program as we move forward. Mr. Chair and committee members, we'd be happy to talk about the report at a future date if you'd like, but otherwise I'll just stand for questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Kadelka? All right, thank you. Thank you. Next, we have Madeline Ciriello from the Minnesota Clean Power Association. Smarello. Thank you. Oh, there we go.
Chair and members of the committee, my name is Madeline Smarello. I represent the American Clean Power Association as the Deputy Director of Siting and Permitting Policy. ACP, American Clean Power, is the leading voice of today's multi-tech clean energy industry, representing energy storage, wind, utility-scale solar, clean hydrogen, and transmission companies. ACP would like to express its concern with House File 1040. While safe and effective disposal of wind and solar infrastructure remains a top priority for industry, this bill pursues an inefficient and unnecessary policy model. First, the bill inappropriately issues a one-size-fits-all approach to renewable energy disposal and drives up project costs. Utility-scale renewable energy projects host large quantities of panels and turbines that require robust waste management, and this program may struggle with recycling at this volume. Notably, this legislation would increase the price of solar and wind components by charging manufacturers a fee dedicated to disposal. Given the large output of utility-scale wind and solar, this could result in cross-subsidizing, meaning that it could increase prices for all infrastructure for a program that only some projects could use. Increased prices disincentivize manufacturers from selling solar and wind products in Minnesota. Importantly, increases are passed to ratepayers by driving up overall project costs, making Minnesotans pay for services that would have otherwise been efficiently managed by a developer in partnership with a recycling company. Second, this legislation takes effect before Minnesota has had time or need to fully develop its solar and wind recycling infrastructure. As many projects have yet to be decommissioned, recycling demand is still fairly low. Recycling costs continue to decline, while competition and innovation grow each year with more vendors entering the recycling market. The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission is already exercising its authority over projects within its jurisdiction by mandating recycling of solar and wind materials, making this legislation both costly and unnecessary. More cost-effective and efficient policy methods exist to promote recycling in Minnesota. ACP looks forward to continuing conversations about an alternative solution with all those involved, and we ask you to reject this legislation. Thank you.
Do we have any questions? Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming here. I just wanted to clarify, you mentioned that there are already requirements for recycling. Can you expand upon that a little bit?
Yes, specifically, Chair.
Ms. Smirillo.
It's okay. Yes, thank you for the question. So the last couple of utility-scale solar dockets at the PUC, projects that have been approved for and received their permits, have had recycling required as part of their decommissioning agreements. And that is why in the report that we saw from MPCA, they recommend lowering the threshold for projects that are subject to decommissioning requirements, as it's easier for the PUC to actually require recycling up front. Thank you.
Representative Jones. And I believe that reduction was from 7 megawatts to 1 megawatt. Is that
I don't have the report in front of me. I believe, so currently the decommissioning requirements would apply to any project that is subject to Public Utility Commission regulations. That would be utility scale projects currently. But if we lower that threshold, it would cover other projects below that utility scale threshold.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, you said it's kind of being taken care of already. What is currently being done in terms of recycling turbine blades, those big blades?
Ms. Murillo.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'll defer to some of the developer testifiers that we have speaking after I am. There's a variety of recycling methods for both wind and solar. As we see the industry grow, those recycling methods are also growing. The industry is adamant to find new ways to create a circular economy for these energy products. So as we continue to develop more, those recycling methods continue to grow as well. But I'll defer on specific methods to the developers.
Representative Anderson, anything else? All right. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have the report in front of me, so I thought I may help out. The report recommends reducing the current 50 megawatt DC threshold for mandatory decommissioning and recycling to 1 megawatt DC.
All right. Thank you, Representative Jones. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
Great
you.
Testimony. James Lenner with the EDF. With American Clean Power Associates. Oh, with Conservation Minnesota. Thank you. Either gave you a pay cut or a pay upgrade, whatever, I don't know. Could you introduce yourself for the committee? Thank you.
Sure thing. Good afternoon, Chair Swedzinski, members of the House Energy and Finance Policy Committee. My name is James Lehner, and I'm the Policy Associate at Conservation Minnesota. I'm here today to share our thoughts on House File 1040. As an organization that cares deeply about Minnesota's clean energy goals and believes that industry should be responsible for the end life of their products, we're thankful to the committee for having this conversation and to Representative Scott for authoring this bill. Product stewardship and extended producer responsibility, or EPR, is a broad category of policies designed to ensure companies are accountable for their products through the end of their usable life. The goal is to push producers to innovate and find more sustainable product design. Their EPR policies, as we've heard already, for things like electronics, tires, paint, and now today even solar panels. Generally, we support EPR policies, but in this instance, we are concerned about how a solar and wind EPR program would play out if adopted today. Currently, only one U.S. state has adopted such a program, that's Washington, and they passed their law in 2017. While it was set to go into effect this year, the State Department of Ecology is pursuing a legislative extension because, in their words, going forwards now would, quote, disrupt the supply and cost of panels available for sale in Washington, end quote. As Minnesota works to meet its clean energy goals, we worry such a change now would have a negative effect on accessibility and affordability and would discourage solar development altogether rather than increasing responsible growth. Last year, we participated in MPCA's Solar Panel Reuse and Recycling Working Group, where we saw a broad interest in making Minnesota's solar industry more sustainable. However, it also revealed that full-scale EPR is not an attainable or viable path at this time. As you've heard, the working group made two recommendations, imposing a landfill ban on used panels and blades, or panels rather, blades are included in the bill, and implementing statewide reuse and recycling requirements, including lowering the megawatt threshold for decommissioning. We support those recommendations and believe these proposals give us a chance to prepare for large-scale solar and wind retirements well before the issue is too big to manage. Adopting a landfill ban like the one laid out in Section 4 of the bill is an important and viable step in this process. While we don't have widely available solar recycling infrastructure in Minnesota yet, a landfill ban would spark growth in the industry, enabling a circular, Minnesota-based clean energy economy, and could perhaps prepare us to enact EPR at a later date. We've spoken with the bill author before and with some members of this committee about this issue, and we believe we can find a strong bipartisan solution this session. We look forward to working with all of you and with other stakeholders on this going forward. And thank you again for your time and consideration, and hopefully this is just the beginning of an important conversation that this committee can keep having.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Adam Sokolsky from EDF Renewables, if you want to introduce yourself for the committee.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Adam Sokolsky. I work for a company called EDF Renewables. We're a large wind, solar, and storage developer here in the United States and North America, where we've developed over 18 gigawatts or 18,000 megawatts of renewables projects over the last 30, 35 years, including here in Minnesota, 12 projects on the wind side for over 1.6 gigawatts or 1,600 megawatts of wind turbines that we've put together into service in Minnesota. We continue to own and operate a number of those wind farms in counties like Nobles, Murray, Lincoln, Pipestone, and Maurer counties. We strongly support and are currently recycling wind and solar materials at the end of life. We do that today, right now. We also share Representative Scott's goals here, but we prefer a different method to get there. We believe we should be keeping these materials out of the waste stream and into the recycling stream so they can be reused and effectively put into new products. We're concerned about House File 1040. It establishes an inefficient quasi-governmental body, a product stewardship organization, to assess administrative fees on recycling 20 or 30 years prior to us to needing that service, right? It's like paying for the destruction of your home up front or the teardown of your home up front 40 years before that would ever happen. It's capital inefficient, it costs a lot, and those costs, if imposed, would be sent right onto ratepayers in the form of higher electricity costs. We've seen similar legislation in the state of Washington. Other testifiers have addressed it. That legislation's been a failure. The state continues to push back the implementation date. Its own Department of Ecology in the state of Washington has called their own law unimplementable. The law is a real challenge with respect to these type of long lifetime products like a solar panel or a wind turbine. That structure, the EPR, Product Stewardship Organization, works a lot better for things like car batteries or tires that are consumer products that have a shorter lifetime, a retail network of suppliers who provide that those products as well as maintain and service those products and can bring them back for recycling. EDF participated in the MPCA stakeholder session that developed the report that was released earlier this week. We were really happy with that process. We didn't agree with 100% of it all the way through, but the recommendations we are steadfast and behind. We think that has an approach within it that addresses some of the core problems we have here, but also acknowledges that current processes between the Utilities Commission, perhaps county conditional use permitting authorities, can work even better to govern the decommissioning and the recycling of these types of material over time. Like I said, EDF and other companies in our space are recycling today. Last year, our company recycled about 10,000 solar panels that were broken construction or storm damage or early end of life, as well as a truck turnover that had some solar panels on it that were being delivered that unfortunately, the truck hit a stop shoulder, turned over, and they broke. We use a very reputable company to do that. They recover a very, very high percentage of the material that goes right back into the supply chain. On the wind turbine side, almost every single component at a wind turbine facility is recyclable, right? steel towers, rebar, aluminum, copper, all get recycled. We have many vendors who are actually out there looking for specific components from wind turbines that have a higher quantity of critical minerals to try to get those critical minerals recycled and back into the supply chain. They're very, very valuable materials. We could acknowledge that wind turbine blades have been a challenge. And we've seen that here in Minnesota and across the United States. There are new suppliers, or not suppliers, vendors out there in the market today who are taking wind turbine blades at high volume and able to recycle them. Sometimes some of them are doing cement co-firing. Some are using different processes to extract the fiberglass material and recycle that into new building and road products. So there's a variety of methods and techniques that can be used from a variety of different vendors. Our team has looked at least six of those on the wind turbine side. More and more as well of the wind turbine suppliers are making their wind turbine blade designs more easy to recycle. So that's coming into market as well. So we've got both the end of life, but also the planning and the re-engineering of the product to make it easier to recycle on the front side. Finally, I think other testifiers mentioned, the Utilities Commission regulates most of the projects that my company builds, owns, and operates. We think that's the right jurisdiction to handle these issues. We can bilaterally right now go out and find recycling services, contract for those services, and tell the Utilities Commission what we've done to ensure that our projects are decommissioned or recycled on time, in a safe manner, and within the requirements of our permits. Happy to have the opportunity to have a conversation with you all today about this, and happy to follow up with any questions you may have.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony, Mr. Sokolsky.
Sokolsky,
thank you. So you talked about some wind turbine recycling outfits. Are there, and ways of doing it, are there any of those places that are opening up shop here in Minnesota?
Mr. Sokolsky.
Chair Swidzinski, Representative Acom, none in Minnesota, but there is a large one in Iowa owned by Alliant Energy called Regen Fiber, I think it is. Our team has been there. They've looked at it. It's a really innovative factory or project or recycler. They're actively, my understanding, is getting up and running now or recently, you know, running. So it's definitely close by. Iowa is not far for a wind turbine blade to travel.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Acom. Okay. All right. Thank you for your testimony. Other questions? Representative Jones.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Sokolsky. I also have a question about facilities for recycling. I'm wondering, are there sufficient numbers of them? Is there sufficient capacity in the existing facilities that are doing this nearby enough?
Mr. Sokolsky.
Chair Swidzinski, Representative Jones. Kevin Harsing, I'm seeing your nameplate there, the little glare. Representative Jones. You know, the capacity is growing. A lot of new entrants to the market are coming in. Companies who are in the metals recycling business are actively coming into the recycling market for solar. Right now, we think there is sufficient capacity. At issue with solar is you need some surge capacity, right? End of life comes in lumpy chunks. And so do you want to have the right... Is the correct capacity to meet the absolute peak to have instantaneous, like, same-day recycling, or how do you work through that over on an annual basis, right? So, yes, I think there is sufficient capacity today. That capacity is growing. It's becoming more sophisticated, and the prices are going down.
Representative Jones? All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. George Damian with the Clean Energy Economy. You'd introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Swidzinski and committee members. My name is George Damian. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for Clean Energy Economy Minnesota, also known as SEEM. SEEM is an industry-led, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization representing the business voice of clean energy in Minnesota. We heard they had expressed concerns about House File 1040 as written, but greatly appreciate Representative Scott for bringing this issue forward. SEEM members recognize the importance of being good stewards of the environment and creating the circular economy while deploying clean energy across our state. However, the proposal put forward this bill is similar to ones in Washington that have been proven to be unworkable to implement without fear of completely crippling the solar industry. Instead, SEEM is specifically echoing previous testifiers who discussed the work of the Solar Recycling Group that seem participating over the interim. The PCA report discussed earlier today lays out a framework for legislation to move Minnesota forward in the right direction, including a landfill ban that is also in Representative Scott's bill. Other key ideas in the report include statewide recycling requirements for all solar installations, lowering decommissioning requirements for any installation above 1 megawatt, and the creation of a central management organization for a project below 1 megawatt to help with logistics for those smaller projects. SEEM and our business members look forward to working with legislators and other stakeholders on this issue to position Minnesota to reap the economic benefits of a sustainable circular economy. Thank you.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? All right. David Moberg. See ya.
Hello again. Good afternoon, Chair Swidzinski, Representative Scott, and committee members. My name is David Moberg. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Solar Energy Industries Association, or MNSEA. MNSEA is a nonprofit trade organization. We represent over 170 member companies and their over 5,000 Minnesota employees, including installers, developers, manufacturers, and others in the Minnesota solar industry. I would like to thank Representative Scott for bringing this bill forward and the committee for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1040. We appreciate and fully support the sentiment contained in this bill. We do not want panels in landfills, in fields, or anywhere else where it's interfering with our environment or with Minnesotan communities. As our executive director, Logan O'Grady, said in this committee last week, if our industry is going to cause a problem in the future, we want to address it, and we believe that the best time to address a problem is before it happens. We specifically support the PCA Working Group report's approach and implementation on solar panel recycling that you've already heard a little bit about today, but we welcome and appreciate this discussion, and we're committed to working with Representative Scott, stakeholders in this committee, to make sure that we get legislation done that solves this problem for everybody involved. I'd like to highlight two quick things from that report from the PCA. I know the whole thing is lengthy. Firstly, there is an immediate and comprehensive landfill ban, also including a ban on incineration and shipping it out of state in order to landfill. In other words, no panels or panel components ending up in the garbage in any way, shape, or form. The onus is on facility owners, operators, and permittees to make sure that they're covering their bases for responsible disposal and not causing any undue harm and adding those materials back into the value stream. Decommissioning requirements, as you've already heard, are lowered from 50 megawatts to 1 megawatt in all co-located CSGs, so it extends existing and effective regulatory frameworks to make sure that, again, everyone is covering their bases, to make sure that these facilities and these materials are responsibly disposed of. And the creation of a central management organization, or CMO, helps smaller installations, especially residential or small commercial and industrial installations, have access to that same scale and coordination of recycling, but also make sure that everyone pays their fair share. So the MPCA proposal, we believe, is a clarification and effective implementation of these similar ideas and principles to solar specifically. There is a wide range of technologies, scales of customer, and types of facility within the broad scope of solar alone, to say nothing of solar and wind. And I would just like to specifically thank the MPCA and everyone involved in the working group, because it represented hundreds of hours of staff time and effort. MPCA, Commerce, Deed, cities, counties, as well as representatives from the industry, including manufacturers, recyclers, and installers, I cannot emphasize enough how comprehensive and long-running this process was. And while I think it was a back-and-forth negotiation, we found a framework that just about everyone can be happy with and move forward. And my thanks to the PCA for coordinating that, as well as the legislature for commissioning the study and working group. Representative Acomb, my thanks for your leadership on that in the previous biennium. At the end of the day, we would like to see solar built in Minnesota, installed in Minnesota, and eventually, if possible, recycled in Minnesota. I'm going to highlight one thing from the report for you. Page 53 of the MPCA report, it's page 26 of Appendix E. The graph there from Eunomia notes that Minnesota is about 15 to 20 years away from the highest annual tonnage of solar panels starting to come offline. We agree that the time is now to make a plan for responsibly dealing dealing with these materials, and as well as the landfill ban and the framework set out here will hopefully encourage a recycling market here in Minnesota, as well as a more circular economy in our state. In short, we're philosophically aligned with this bill, support the MPCA report's recommendations for implementation, and look forward to working with the author and stakeholders to make sure we get something done. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and Mencia is available for questions should you have any.
All right. Are there any questions at all? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Nicholas Kane.
Hello there. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Nicholas Kane, Director of Government Affairs for SolarCycle. And SolarCycle is an advanced recycler of solar panels. We're dedicated to creating a circular economy that's clean, green, and promotes growth here in the United States. Let me just say that we support the goals of this bill, and we share the concerns that Representative Scott raised at the beginning of the meeting. As recyclers, we want to keep solar out of landfills, and we want to ensure that renewables are safely managed when they reach the end of their life. However, after reviewing the bill, we believe that HF 1040 is not the best approach because it doesn't fit solar well as a product. It's too inflexible to adapt to a kind of rapidly changing industry, and it's going to drive up costs both for recycling and for Minnesotans generally. We worked closely with PCA and other stakeholders over the past year, and we're very impressed with the process that PCA ran and the participation by all the stakeholders. And we believe that either of the approaches in that report will be more effective and more efficient, and thus cheaper for people who have to pay for electricity than the approach in HF 1040. Let me just start with some good news from the recycling perspective. The number of panels reaching end of life is still pretty small, especially on the residential side. And the number of recyclers is growing rapidly. Solar Energy Industry Association now has 12 companies that are part of its national PV recycling program. And the number of participants who meet the kind of criteria to participate, and SolarCycle is a member of that, has grown rapidly over the past 2 years. So when solar systems are ready to be retired in Minnesota, you will have a choice of providers who can do it in an efficient and safe and cost-effective way. In addition, you know, and this maybe speaks to one of the questions that I heard earlier in the discussion, is the industry is moving quickly to recycle. And over the past few years, we've signed recycling service agreements with about two-thirds of the largest developers, asset owners, and module manufacturers who are active in the United States. So let me talk a little bit about the problems I see with a kind of pretty pure EPR, extended producer responsibility approach. So I've been working very intensively in Washington, in California, and in other states around the country to help regulators kind of fashion, and lawmakers fashion the best ways to regulate solar, because we certainly believe that there should be some regulations at end of life. One problem we see with the EPR style bills or programs is that they're relatively inflexible. So the approach in HF 1040 puts the onus of responsibility on producers, but when you have a relatively small market like Minnesota, what we found is that producers will often just opt to not sell into the state. And that's the problem that Washington State has had, and it's a bigger market than Minnesota if you look at the total amount of installed solar and the total amount of projects that are in development. So we're concerned about that. It's also a really rapidly changing industry. It's really interesting. Like, one thing that's been great about working in Minnesota is seeing all the innovative work you've been doing and seeing how community solar has been growing rapidly. I think that's an application of solar that, you know, we didn't see as a big end use just a few years ago, and now it's growing rapidly. So that's just an example of how a bill like this can be hard to adapt to a technology that's changing so quickly. Another thing we've done is we've looked at where EPR programs are most successful, and Representative Scott brought this up in her testimony at the beginning of the hearing. And she pointed out that she's modeled this bill after the Paint Care program, which is certainly a reasonable approach to create a piece of legislation like this. But it highlights the problem that we see, which is that solar panels are very much unlike the other programs, the other products typically regulated by EPR bills. So paint, paint that's not on your house or on your building, right? Paint, the liquid paint, doesn't have much of a lifespan, right? You want to recycle it pretty quickly, and it doesn't have much value. I don't think it has really any value as a recycled product. On the other hand, solar panels, all the tier one manufacturers have 25-year warranties right now, and Maxeon actually offers a 40-year warranty, so they're very long lasting. And they have a significant amount of secondary value that we've been able to unlock as recyclers. So that's why we don't think the EPR style program is a great fit for solar. The other problem with a bill like this that we see is that it's just going to drive up bills for Minnesotans. Whether it'll drive up ratepayer bills for those who have to deal with utility, the cost via their utility, or just drive up the bills for those who want to use solar or participate in a community solar project. And actually, what we found is that by adding more regulatory compliance and adding more cost, it's actually going to slow down recycling, which will harm the ability of recyclers like us to innovate rapidly and solve this problem. So just to sum up, we agree wholeheartedly with Representative Scott that solar and other renewable energy systems should be handled safely and responsibly at the end of their life, and we don't want to see any problems like the one she highlighted cropping up. I'll just say I spent 5 years as a graduate student studying community opposition to all kinds of energy infrastructures, infrastructure including power lines. And I know that ensuring that communities understand we can manage these resources at the end of their life is critical. So I'm in full agreement with her motivations and goals for the legislation. But we just think that the approach set out, one or either of the approaches set out in the PCA report will be more effective and more efficient and thus less costly. Let me close with another thank you. I've really enjoyed having the opportunity to work with people in Minnesota, Minnesota SEIA, PCA, and the working group, and the various lawmakers who I've had the chance to speak with. Minnesota really sets the bar in my experience for how a state should handle these type of policy issues. The working group was an incredibly detailed and really well-structured effort. And so thanks for doing that. And I hope that the committee will take one of the approaches set out in that report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kane. Just a quick question in general on just kind of the way, from a recycling standpoint, I've heard numbers thrown around that, the average solar cell maybe contains, a half an ounce of silver and amount of gold. Do you have some of those just at the tip of your fingers just to share with the committee on how, from a precious metal standpoint or, from a metal standpoint, kind of what's in that as it's being in the amount you're able to recover?
Yes, I can give you a general breakdown. So for a typical crystalline silicon module panel, which is the most common type of solar panel, and I think best suited to Minnesota's environment. Glass is the number one material by weight. And our process allows us to recover that glass cleanly so it can be repurposed and reused in other products like insulation. And we're actually working to build a glass plant in Georgia that will use recycled cullet is what this little ground up glass is called to make new glass for new solar panels. And once we reach 50% cullet at that factory, it will reduce emissions from glass production by around 30%. The number two material by weight is typically the aluminum frame. And that also has a lot of value. I think probably as the members of this committee know, aluminum is a critical material according to the Department of Energy, and it's really important to a lot of products. And secondary aluminum, that is aluminum from a recycled solar panel or other recycled product, reduces the emissions as compared to making that amount of aluminum from new materials, from raw materials, by over 95%. And then I think typically the in terms of weight, the polymers and the semiconductor material are pretty equal, and those are the smallest components. But to answer your question in terms of value, yes, the silver and the precious metals, silver and copper, are probably return the most value, and then aluminum, and then glass, and then probably the polymers are last.
Okay. Thank you.
I have I have more data I can share with you if that's of interest to the committee.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Kane. Any other questions? Member discussion. Any other questions for Representative Scott? Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, if he's still here. Sorry, I should have been better prepared and had the question ready when you were there, Assistant Commissioner. My apologies.
Mr. Kadelka, if you'd just reintroduce yourself for the committee, and Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner. I just wanted to ask you about a couple different things. We have been talking about solar projects, 1 megawatt and above. What about like rooftop and smaller? Are they addressed in the recommendations that came out of the stakeholder group also?
Mr. Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, for the record, again, my name is Kirk Adelka with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Correct. We branch off in the report two different ways to handle materials. Those in the household would be under what we call Approach B, which a central management organization would handle, very similar to how a product stewardship organization would work to make sure that it's collected and sent for reuse or recycling.
Representative Akam.
Thank you. And then just one final question. With the recommendations that you have in the further stakeholder engagement and process, do you need any legislative authority, or do you have the authority to do that already from the initial legislation? I can't remember.
Mr. Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, there's a couple things. The disposal ban would need legislation such as the author's bill. The other parts, it's still up to be determined. The decommissioning pieces, we're going to work on a little bit more to see how that's done through the local governments, and also PUC, what that split is. And then the central management organization may, depending on the funding source. That's going to be the key part there, and who actually is that organization. We have committed to bringing stakeholders together to work on what that central management organization works on and that statewide recycling criteria to be able to finalize that and then understand better what would need legislative approval.
Wonderful.
Thank Representative Akam.
Thank you. That's helpful.
All right. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, and thank you for sharing this bill with me in advance. So my question, I've got a few questions, couple of questions, I guess. So on the report recommendations that just came out, what do you think about those? Are you willing to incorporate those in modifying this bill to kind of incorporate some of that?
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kraft, for that question. And it's interesting, I finally get a bill hearing on this, and then like less than 48 hours before the hearing, this thing comes out, right? So yes, the answer to that is yes, Representative Kraft. And I, you know, with the decommissioning and recycling and stuff that this document has, you know, uncovered, and there are paths going forward, I think we need to pivot, right, and do this kind of this two-pronged path that they're suggesting for larger scale solar and then divide that with the smaller stuff that you Representative Akam just asked, excuse me, Commissioner Kadelka. So absolutely, sorry, still trying to get rid of this respiratory thing.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Scott, I'd be willing to work with you on that because I think this is an important issue. And I'll just then make some comments as to why I had some concerns with the bill as it was. And, you know, one of the things, and I have to say, I'm quite a fan of extended producer responsibility approaches. I think it's the right approach. I did hear, and I heard some of the arguments about building in costs to folks, and I recognize those, but the best time to build in costs to things is up front. Mm-hmm. So I like this approach. I've carried and gotten EPR bills passed. The questions I would have is on implementing one for turbines and solar panels, is the end of life for these are 20, 30, 40 years away. And so I think that creates some complexities in that we may be forcing people buying panels now to pay for stuff that was done sometime in the past. And then the other piece is, you know, in a mar, often like you take paint or even the boat wrap plastic that I carried last year, when you put a cost on one option up front, paint, there's only one option. You want to paint, you're using paint, right? So it's applied equally. My concern with this is, you know, some of the options for providing electricity are solar, wind, coal, gas, you know, other things. And I would be more open to things like this if we had an extended producer responsibility approach for those other things that cause a lot of harm to the environment and create all kinds of costs for us to mitigate in the future. So those are my concerns, but I'm look forward to working with you on the some of the recommendations from this task force. Thanks.
All right. I don't believe there's a question there, Representative. Sounds good. All right. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Larry said everything I wanted to say.
dibs. We got a dibs problem. All right. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to start, I want to make – it's funny that this bill is House File 1040 when we're talking about paying taxes. But it's actually fitting in a lot of ways, right? Because if we're going to be creating things that have – not only cost up front, but beneficial cost down the road, I think it is fitting that this bill is titled, it has the number attached to it, 1040. And I think it's an accountability factor. And Representative Kraft, you kind of brought out the point there that these are going to have longer lifespans. I think it is important to talk about, but there's a lot that can happen in time. So I guess, and this is kind of a question, but what I wanted to get at is there's a lot of factors that can contribute to what's going to happen to those solar and wind facilities, right? For all we know, the brand new solar facility that gets put up, you know, act of God, hail comes and destroys the whole thing. Now the 30-year lifespan turned into a one-year lifespan. So it is important that we capture that up front. So I wanted to ask the bill author, was that kind of built into the bill to cover that on that purpose? And just your thoughts on that kind of statement.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Igo, so through the years as I've watched green energy come and develop, I remember, I don't know what years it was, but we were getting a lot of defective panels from China. And then we hear of the hailstorms. And so even though on a large scale, this stuff probably hasn't reached its useful life, it is happening. It's these things are still being put in landfills, or there has to be some decision made along the way for how to dispose of the ones that were either faulty at end of life or have been destroyed by acts of Mother Nature. So it's kind of a multifold thing there. And, you know, I think that, and a lot of this wind stuff, I mean, I see piles of these wind blades in a lot of different places. So something's not happening that should be happening. So whatever the solution to that is, that's what I want.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott, for that answer. One of the other parts in your bill that I really like, well, that's why I'm a co-author, was the end of the bill where you talk about how none of this can go into landfills. And I think that's really good foresight apart from the tax, because we've had this conversation in this committee before and in the Environment Committee when I was on it about how, you know, a way for us to work on critical minerals was to go into landfills. But that's an environmental disaster in itself. So making sure that these things aren't going to those places is great foresight on the future. And so I agreed with one of the testifiers that, and one of the things I'm really passionate about is creating a circular economy. And we can only create circular economies if we control where things are going. And I think having a tax on the front end to make sure we're looking after these materials that we're going to need for generations to come is incredibly important. And technology is going to be changing a lot too. And I think that's a part of the conversation that's really important to this bill, that sure, we have solar panels right now that are, you know, X efficient and are going to last 30 years. But for all we know, in 5 to 10 years, solar panels might be that much better, or a wind turbine might be that much better. And the cost actually might make sense to take that thing down early and put the new one up. I mean, it applies to cars, it applies to computers. I mean, how many people in this room get a new cell phone every 6 months, right? So I think
not it's me. iPhone. I think this is a 12. I'm not sure.
Oh. I'm not one of those either.
Is that a flex?
But it's making a point that we're in a consumerism society, and people like to purchase the new and shiny thing, and I think it applies a lot to the technology we use every day. So thank you for bringing the bill forward to us today, and I look forward to continuing working with you and supporting it.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Scott, for bringing this bill. I came in late, so I didn't get the full rundown of it, but I am definitely interested, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness with which you came to this issue. As you probably know, I did a lot of work on electronic waste over the past couple of years, and I've gotten to tour a lot of e-waste facilities and learn a lot about how and why solar panels are broken down. And the reality is it's really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the hardest things to take apart and to break into pieces and to get that, like, copper and those minerals out of. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I do appreciate that you have taken the time to dive into this. And I want to learn more about it since I was late. It's my fault. Maybe I'll sit in on judiciary. But I do appreciate that it's not enough for us to say that this is a problem for tomorrow. It's a problem for today.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, as well, would like to thank Representative Scott for bringing this forward and for being a leader back in 2014, thinking about these things a decade ago. So, and I appreciate that your bill includes the landfill ban, which I think you heard from every testifier, that there's strong support for that. And so I think that's a really important first step. I think that MPCA and the stakeholders had a really thoughtful process, and I really appreciate your willingness to pivot to embrace some of the or all of the recommendations coming out of that. I'm excited to hear that we have a recycling industry that's starting to develop here in Minnesota. I think that is reflective of the priorities of our state, wanting to make sure that we are not being bad stewards of these products and that we are disposing of them properly. And so that's exciting. And while Iowa is close, I would like to see a similar thing happening around wind turbines in Minnesota too. So I appreciate your willingness to work with us and the stakeholders on this bill moving forward. So thank you for that and appreciate the conversation today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott, to your bill. Any final comments?
Thank you. I really appreciate the conversations both in this committee and outside of here with the stakeholders. And I really do care about this stuff. Like I said, I don't want, you know, half a dozen pigs pits to have to clean up in a few years. And the circular economy is really important here. And to recycle as much of this stuff as we can is really important. And even 2 years ago when I was looking into the recycling piece, not many people were doing it because it was just cost prohibitive because of what Rep. Sampal said. It's a meticulous, time-consuming efforts go into recycling, particularly these panels. So I'm interested about both the wind and the solar, and we haven't gotten started on car batteries yet, so EV batteries. So I think that's a concern that we're going to have to look at too. But I really appreciate the good discussion and the support to go forward and conquer this issue.
Thank you, Representative Scott. And just I would encourage you as this bill moves forward to work with Representative Kraft and other members that may show some interest in that as this is being crafted. Sorry. I apologize for that. Representative Scott renews her motion that House File 1040 as amended be referred to the Environment and Natural Resource Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The motion passes and the bill is on its way to Environment Committee. There we go. Members, our next meeting will be on Tuesday, March 4th. This meeting is adjourned.